This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Back for another episode of Aftershock Central Podcast. Travis
good
is
to be
here
back.
With me. How you doing, Travis?
Oh, man. It's just great to be back on Aftershock Central, man. Life is good. How about you?
It's down with the sickness, but we're okay. Yeah. San Diego was last weekend, and Aftershock was quiet, like the only publisher that seemed to be quiet, so they made Tremors afterwards, because as of this recording, they just announced a new book.
Nice.
And it is called Shoplifters Will Be Liquidated, and it'll hit stores in October. And it is by Patrick Kinlan. If you remember, he did Martin's favorite pronunciation book of Aftershock, which is Patience, Conviction, and Revenge. And then the art is by Stefano Simeon, who did the art for Clan Killers.
Awesome.
And so it is basically being described as, imagine Judge Dredd working for Amazon. So
that sounds pretty.
Yeah. So the elevator pitch, I guess, is that it's set in the near future, where retail is the biggest game in town, and staff are permitted to combat the potential loss of product at any cost.
Mm. So it's a you know, alternate future where retail actually survives?
Maybe. I mean, it just says it's a hyper capitalist future, and a job and loss prevention is the closest a man can get to a judge, jury, and executioner, basically. So I would say that, like, shoplifters would, or rioting would be, like, something of the future, maybe. And to lose that product, you know, as your employer just tells you to, you know, make sure that you protect the product at any cost. That's how it seems. I mean, there's only a couple paragraphs for it, so.
I mean, dude, that sounds like a huge concept story, you know, and, like, super timely, so.
Yep. And it says it's a mini series, so that's the first one in a while that actually just comes out and says it's a mini series, so we'll see.
Well, awesome, man.
The art and the preview pages from the article looks pretty good, so we'll see from there.
See, the art in Clan Killers was pretty bomb.
Yep.
I mean, I'm curious how it's gonna translate into a different you know, premise, or, you know,
well, and setting. Also, yeah, also, like, the period piece type stuff, because, like, Clan Killers was more old school, and this is, like, you know, futuristic, I guess. Like Jetsons, Judge Dredd style.
Yeah, it's like, replace fantasy for sci-fi.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're gonna do four books this episode. We're going to do Oberon 5, Orphanage 4, Animosity 22, and Mary Shelley Monster Hunter number 4. Where you want to start off?
I mean, you want to do them in that order?
Sure, because Oberon is the last one.
Is it?
Well, by your premise, it is, because it says the end at the very last page.
Yes, it does say the end. So that's, you know, that's a strong indicator. It's not necessarily, like, totally conclusive.
Yeah, yeah, it's not 100%, but... let's see. Oberon number 5, written by Ryan Parrott. Art by Milos Sakovic. And Leonardo Pacquiao and Charles Pritchett. And this...
Nailed it!
Yeah. Yes. Since Martin's on vacation, that means Ronnie... The Butcher of Names is back in town. And this issue is called Death and the Nevermen. So, where do you want to kick off?
I mean, I feel like, you know, we could kind of go, like, big picture, like, summary, like, for the series just in general, mm-hmm. you know, and then maybe, like, narrow down a bit, yeah. like... Yeah. So, I mean, I think that my take on this as an ending is kind of like what I was suggesting to you, which is like if this were volume one of a story, you know, mm-hmm. like I think, like, you know, yeah, there's a lot of intriguing stuff and, you know, like, kind of, a lot would work for me there, like, as far as things not really tied up that, you know, are, you know, they're left out there.
Right.
But if this is the end, like, it's kind of disappointing for me in that sense.
Okay. I could see that, because there's a lot of threads and a lot of subplots that are still left unanswered.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. Like, I kind of was left with a lot of questions about where they were going with certain things that right. kind of, are, you know, largely unclear.
Yeah. Like? Give me an example.
Okay, so, like, I still... don't really understand what was going on ever with the Nevermen, you know, and like how that relates to Bonnie, you know, like that's, I feel how they opened up, right. Was kind of with the Nevermen. And you see like the frog guy and he's on watch for the Nevermen. And, you know, like then they kind of fall away to the background and this issue, they show up and they're looking for Bonnie, you know, and they kind of hint at that. That's another pretty, as far as I'm considered, like open-ended question is like, what is her deal and how is it connected to the end of times? You know? So like the two of those are connected. I don't know if the Nevermen are after her to use her for the end of times. But, like, I feel like kind of neither of those are really addressed in this.
There is enough warrant for this book, then that leaves the open end for, like, season 2 or volume 2, which I hope we get, really, because I enjoyed this a lot. And so, but yeah. It doesn't really make it any clearer of why the Nevermen are actually there for Bonnie. Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And like, I agree with you, man. Like I do like this series, you know, the art in particular, like I think is awesome.
Yeah.
But like, if this is the end, I kind of like feel like it's not necessarily like a tight story, you know, and like, you know, I don't know. Maybe you could argue that the point is more like relationship stuff and not the like the bigger kind of world stuff. But, it, you know, like seemed like they were going somewhere with that, you know?
Right. Yeah. Or actually writing for more than just this volume one, you know, and leaving stuff open-ended so you can pull on it later, as to where a lot of things are, you know, wrote, you know, for the here and now, for the trade, basically. So, I don't know. I would hate to see it not get a volume two, and then, you know, a lot of questions are unanswered, so then it comes fan fiction and up to us to flesh out what we think happened.
Oh, dude, I would love to read your Oberon fan fiction.
I don't know.
Let's put that up on the website.
So, you have anything else with this one?
I mean, I'm still kind of intrigued with kind of the, you know, Titania mm-hmm. angle of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like they still are pretty vague about what happened between her and Oberon. Like, obviously it was betrayal and he was ousted.
Right.
And they kind of hint to like a grayness here, which is like, you know, maybe she's the ruthless one, or more likely they're both ruthless.
Right. Yeah.
So like, you know, I in theory can get behind stories that really kind of embrace like moral relativism and, you know, like it's all, you know, shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's stuff that I get from like my favorite Valiant stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But like, it would be nice to know what really was going on there. Like, did she know that Bonnie was the Lovett and that's why she hides her out, you know? And like kind of at the end, you know, like she's planning to make a deal with the Nevermen, but it seems like she's bargaining for the thing that they want,
mm-hmm.
which is Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what, like where that was going.
Yeah. And I think,
yeah,
it brings a lot of question of who's right and who's wrong. Right. With Titania and Oberon, like you said, the gray area part of it, because she's doing it for whatever her reasons are. He's doing it for whatever his reasons are. And then it leaves that moral question of which one are you going to choose to decide who's the quote good guy, quote bad guy type thing. Or are they both just wrong altogether?
I think that's how I take it. Is yeah. They're both wrong
mm-hmm.
and neither are right.
Yeah. Which is generally how it is anyways, right?
Yeah, the one right one, like, was Nicholas, and he got blown away, so...
Yeah, yeah. All right, final thoughts.
Okay, my final thought is I'm going to give this one a bump just because Ronnie's character.
Oh, yeah. Eat that, Martin.
Yeah, I would love to know the running score.
Yes, the running score. I don't know, because maybe Martin's a more common name than Ronnie. But, I mean, I did appear in a Black Eyed Kid comic, so, you know. That kind of has more points in it, too.
No, I mean, it's got to be a fair, objective scoring system.
Yeah, true.
But I think I just saw Travis like maybe this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see?
It's like first one.
Bring in. You're no longer an intern, so now your name comes out there, right? See?
Yeah. No, that's why I've been doing it.
That's right. All right. So give me your final score on this issue, and then final score overall, or rating, whatever.
Okay, so I'll say, oof, tough. on this issue, I'll give both a 3.75.
Okay.
And I mean, like, I that's just because, like, I mean, okay. No. Let me take that back. If there's another volume forthcoming someday that picks up these things and builds on, like, all of the things that they set up, you know, like I'll give it a, you know, 4.5.
Okay.
But if you know, this is the end, like, I'll give it more like a 3.75.
Okay. I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on both, just because I think it was pretty consistent, so I enjoyed it. You know, it was consistent issue after issue, and then the overall volume of it was, like we said, really loved the art, and I really liked the story, and hopefully we get another volume, because then it might even go up to 4.5, like you said, if I knew. But as the way things stand now, and we don't know if there's going to be another volume, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 for both.
Yeah, and if volume 2 has a Travis in it,
then it goes up to a 7 out of 5.
Then it'll be a full 5 out of 5.
All right. So where do you want to go from there, my friend?
You want to do Orphan Age next?
Orphan Age is good. It is Orphan Age 4, written by Ted Anderson, art by Nuno Pilotti, and Jorge Lemos and Marshall Dillon. And this issue is called Loss. So, in the Orphan Age, I mean, they finally get to Albany in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like this is your normal post-apocalyptic book? Kind of like Animosity or Walking Dead from Image? Or do you get a different sense?
I kind of think so far, I don't see a ton that, like, stands out to me that's, like super original, like, that, like, is very distinctive versus kind of, as you say, like, so many of the post-apocalyptic stories in various media.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I think the one maybe unique thing is not even tied to, like, the general premise, but it's just kind of how, you know, functional, like that there are seemingly these, like, settlements that we've seen that are functional and peaceful, even if they're surrounded by chaos, you know, like, that's something that, like, you kind of had it in the like the Walking Dead, but they tend to be, you know, much smaller or much less peaceful, you know?
Right. The one thing, and yes, the overall part of it, yes, it seems very post-apocalyptic part, but I really dig, like, the kind of like the Wild Westis feel, if that makes sense. Like, everything's stripped away. And then plus the new concept of, like, there is no adults. There's just kids. And kids had to figure out for themselves. Like, in this issue, I think, they explained that, you know, the kids in that time weren't learning how to do normal things, so then when this happened, then they had to refigure out stuff on their own. And I thought that was really cool. A really cool concept to dive into, because that would be like now, almost. Because, you know, even I do it sometimes, where I'm like, okay, well, let me YouTube a video to show me how to do XYZ. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that this it was a cool aspect to hit on and explain why things are the way they are.
Yeah, and I thought that it was interesting in that same exchange that they kind of nod to the idea that, like, in this town, basically, you know, their approach was, like, let's just do our best to try to, like, readopt what, like, was done before, you know? And, you know, essentially they're limited to resources that are, you know, hard copy and not digital. I mean, so that's interesting. And, like, building on that, the idea that, like, in a way, Albany is limited, at least right now, in their approach, because at best, they're trying to recreate a paradigm that didn't work, you know, it, like, isn't working great for, like, modern society right now.
Right.
You know, so all of the, like, at best, they're trying to get back to how that all works. And, like, really pertinent example, like, in this issue is they're talking about currency, you know, and the idea that you didn't have any poor people in this town before they invented currency.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is an excellent point, too. Because if before it was just, you know, trading and whatever, and that's how you got by. But then once currency hit the stage, then, you know, it made the classes, basically. How do you feel about the lady that we meet here? What's her name? Lindy.
Yeah.
Do you think that she's just there to offset Willa? Or is it just the end that we have for Daniel in Albany? Because obviously... Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I got the sense that, obviously they know each other, but I think that my sense was they know each other.
Yeah, they really know each other, yeah. I was just curious if Willow's actually going to be not someone who we think. She's always been that mysterious character anyway for the first three issues or whatever, but... Like, the new church, or whatever it's called. Is that what it's called? The religious zealots. Like, she's going to have to be, like, a defective person away from there, I think. Or they came and burned her village, or whatever. And she has a revenge vendetta against them that she's hiding from Daniel and Princess.
Yeah, I think they actually say that explicitly in this issue. Like, I think Daniel says, like, that he thinks she wants revenge on the church. I don't know if it's bad to see, like, the way that they kind of, like, set up these characters that I assume that, you know, like, there might be kind of a romantic juxtaposition, like with her and Daniel, like, they're setting something up there, you know, and then you throw in kind of this, like, old flame here, but, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to play into it at all. But I take your point about Willa.
See, I think it's even deeper than that. Like, I don't think that, since they're hinting at it, I don't think that that's her reason, Willa's reason at all. I think she might be one of the kids that's, like, higher up in the church and she doesn't want to be there, and she doesn't like it, and so that's why she's out on her own, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Like, throwing that twist in there, that she's, like, I don't know, because we don't know who is actually running the new church, right? We don't know the hierarchy in the church, right? We just know that it's the group that's trying to destroy everything or take over for in the name of God or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because, see, I think...
Yeah, I mean,
I think she's... Whoever that the hierarchy person is, I think she's related to them, and she doesn't... So I think it's more... I don't think she got scorned by it. I think she's just against it, but she's in, like, somehow related to the person running the new church, if that makes sense. That's my crazy theory.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that'd be awesome, dude.
So, I mean, that's... Because this book does this well, and it... flushes out characters really good and the world. So to me, to cheapen that would not be good for the book, if that makes sense.
Cheapen it, like, in what way?
Like, just cheapen it, like, how it's been so character in-depth really well, and then, like, really well exploring this world, and to make it a simple write-off type thing of where, you know, she's just the standard character and her village got burned by the new church, so she's out for revenge type thing. I think that would... I don't think that lines up with how good the character development is now, if that makes sense. Like, easy out type thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember, like, where she was in previous issues. Like, I remember in the last issue, there was kind of an argument between, like, kind of individualism and collectivism between the two of them. And uh-huh. I forget which. I feel like she was on the side of, like, no, you can't, like, be totally alone and isolated. You know, like, arguing for society, essentially.
Right, yeah. The yin and the yang, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, another thing that I thought was, like, an interesting idea in this issue is kind of when they're talking about, like, electricity and technology, and Lindy says something like, you know, they are very slow to, like, reintegrate new technologies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like basically having lost them all, that now it's very much like looking at things one by one and deciding whether they are, like, a net good.
Right.
And, you know, how that could kind of, like, stand in the way of, I don't know, progress, if it is progress,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, what is progress?
Right.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's even, and like you said, like, even... trying to get back what they had by reading in the textbooks and the restaurant, even, for example, the restaurant itself is, because the last time Daniel was there, he seemed surprised that the restaurant's there now. So that's a little progress. I mean, it's not super fast-paced progress, but it seems like they're making progress, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, But, you know, now they have poor people and people who can eat at the restaurant. And where do they eat, you know?
Yeah, like, right. It's kind of making the... Yeah, even though you have progress, then there's setbacks too, or whatever, just like, and now, and we're not even in the post-apocalyptic type world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be, because, you know, it's like the old saying, two steps forward, one step back type thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it is progress for the people who, you know, can afford to and like enjoy the benefits. But, you know, for the people that are on like the other end of that, it probably feels like the opposite, you know,
right.
Like,
right.
They didn't say whether or not they still have a mess hall or whatever.
Right.
That like that everybody else goes to, or like, you know, what they do if you're, you know, if you don't have a, you know, a steady income.
Yeah. But, yeah. What happens then?
Yeah. Okay. Another important question for
okay.
you.
Okay.
Did you notice that Lindy, has one arm?
I did notice that. I didn't notice it at first, but I was going to bring that up too. Oh, it was in the actual restaurant when I noticed it, when they sat down.
Yes.
Because at first, like when they meet her in the library or where, whatever that was, I thought it was because she had like her arm behind her back or we couldn't see it. So, but yeah, I thought that was... There's got to be a story behind that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how quickly they're going to get to what happened there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's a choice, and I don't know. Like the obvious assumption is that they're going to address how that happened, and, you know, perhaps it has something to do with the last time the new church came knocking.
Yeah. I mean, it's there for a reason, or not there for a reason. So,
I mean, there's not a lot of other, like, amputees we've seen so far.
Right, right. That's kind of, yeah. And what about Stella? Princess's friend. Do you think... I mean, is it just coincidence now that Daniel goes to Albany and meets up with an old friend, and then Princess finds an old friend, and then you still have a lonely, brooding Willa that doesn't have anybody? Is that coincidence?
I mean, what do you mean? Is it coincidence? Like from, like in the context of the events of the story?
Yeah, yeah. Like, is that hitting us over the head? Kind of that. Everybody needs somebody to grasp onto, as to where, you know, Willa's alone and by herself, so to speak, even though she's with other people.
You know. Perhaps, like I still kind of like I don't necessarily get the warmth, or, you know, like the romantic vibe coming from Daniel in these interactions, you know, like
towards Willa, like or towards Lindy.
Towards Lindy.
Okay.
You know, like he seems kind of noncommittal, and you know, yeah. As you would be. If you tend to be like basically a nomad, but in this context, you know, now basically they're under siege, right? You know, they're surrounded by the church, and yep. They're going to be there as long as it takes for that to whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mean... I didn't really mean, like, in a romantic way. I just meant, like, like Lindy was an old friend. You know, or however you define friend reading from, you know, this issue. As to, you know, and Stella was Princess's friend from before, but we haven't seen anybody for Willa whatsoever. So she's been the lone wolf this whole time. And, like, for her reasons, like, I think she just hitched a ride, basically, because she didn't want to stay where she was at. And that's why she's with Daniel and Princess in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, she could just be a survivor in general, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she was in a spot where, you know, like, it seemed clear that everybody in town was going to be murdered, and she took a, you know, she took an offer to flee from that town. You know, I feel like she understands the value of, you know, not being totally alone, even if she is, you know, like, Dan is also a drifter, you know, and he seems more the drifter type. You know, he's kind of getting pulled into something here that isn't as much how he's introduced, although he, you know, his introduction in this comic is like basically, you know, unconscious and near death. So we don't really know what his backstory is.
Right. I don't know. This is like one of those comics that you read and then you think about it afterwards, or at least for me. And I'm really enjoying this whole series, even though it's kind of right up my wheelhouse anyways for the post-apocalyptic type stuff. But, and I know I've said that like 6 times now, that word. But I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems like everything's done right almost. And I'm loving the build up for everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, and it's kind of very, I feel like the writing is restrained, you know?
Yeah.
Like it reads very fast, but obviously there's a lot to consider, you know, there's stuff to discuss. I mean, I'm curious, I guess, like, maybe just in a meta sense, whether, you know, post-apocalyptic stories in general are like a commentary on our current society, you know, or if they are escapist stuff that, you know, like it's more, you know, I don't know, like, so like, certain things about it in that came up in our discussion seems like this kind of does speak to, you know, some kind of like discussion of current society. So I'm down for that.
Yeah. And I think the kids having to start over because they didn't know a lot of stuff, I think is a reflection of our society today as well. Like, if that happened now, would kids of this certain age know how to do things? Because a lot of them are technology-driven, right? Like, how many times, like at C2E2, for example, we saw tons of people just walking around that, like, staring at their phone inside the con. So, you take that all away and... do they really know how to change a tire or, you know, make stuff like a blacksmith would? Like, I don't know how to do that. I know how to change a tire, but, you know, if there's no more resources to get gas or whatever, then changing a tire in a car really doesn't matter much anymore. So it's like, sure. So it's like, what's really important in this world? And I think that's one of the reasons why I think it's really cool how it reflects on today's world if it were to happen.
Yeah, and but also I would add that if the idea is that like this story is about a bunch of children, you know, basically that like, you know, learn how society works or something and rebuild it. Like, if that's supposed to be a commentary on like how actual society works, you know, that from a you know, when you're a child, mm-hmm. like you are inundated and indoctrinated with this is the way this works, you know, and you're just like, okay, you know, this is the way things work. And,
yeah,
you know, like if that's, that could be an interesting commentary if that's at all what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah.
Final thoughts? Are you ready to raise up?
I'm ready.
Let me have it.
I'm going to go 4 out of 5.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I'm going to go 4 out of 5, too. And I can't wait till next issue when we get to see the church come through the gates.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, it could be a siege, right?
Yeah. You know,
there's only one of them that's there.
Well, like, only why... one that we see, right?
Yeah, but why break down the doors right now? I don't know. Unless they also have no resources and they're just bluffing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of what I thought anyway, because that's how they're getting by with different things, is they're sieging other places, right? So that's how they get their resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're low on resources, then you take down one of the biggest ports that's near you because you don't have enough resources to go to a different one. So we'll see. And I like the look of this kid for the new church because it's funny to me because he has gauges in his ear and he's got the mohawk type thing. So he even looks like a religious zealot type person. Or a new age.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if he got those at a super young age, or if that was one of the skills that they conjured from the past. Was like, oh yeah, we could do piercings again. We figured that out.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure it's probably, or you know, it's like that could show his hierarchy in the church itself, right? Because if you don't have gauges, then you're not as high on the on the pole or on the list as other people. I mean, we've seen past cultures do that before. So, I mean, not with gauges.
Absolutely.
Not with gauges, obviously, but... All right.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I thought you were talking about, like, the Amazon tribes or Africa that have, like, the big, like, things in various, like, flexible parts.
Yeah, and, like, the one African tribe, the rings around their neck, each ring represents how high or, I don't remember, it represents their knowledge, I think, of how knowledgeable they are or, you know, the pecking order type thing. So if you only have like 2 rings around your neck, then that's one thing. But if you have like 6 or 8, then you're obviously higher, older, and wiser.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, but yes, I'm looking
food
forward
for
to the next one. Yep. All right. We have Animosity or Mary Shelley. What's next?
Well, I feel pretty warmly about Animosity, so I feel like that's a good closer.
Okay.
I like Mary Shelley, too, but I feel like the Animosity discussion might be a little stronger on the close.
Okay. So we'll do Mary Shelley Monster Hunter #4, written by Adam Glass, art by Olivia Cataro Briggs and Hayden Sherman, and letters by Sal Cipriano. And this issue is entitled Betrayal. So I'm just going to take a moment and say how much I love Hayden Sherman's art.
Yes.
Like, from everything that we've seen him do. This, he changes his vibe, not his art style, just the vibe of it to go with whatever book he's working on. And I really like it a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, he also does the colors, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like his colors overall, like in all his work, is, you know, super expressive and dynamic, you know? And like this book has a palette that doesn't seem that familiar from the other things I've seen him do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, like, I don't know. That's I find that super impressive, you know?
Yeah. And it's almost like, I don't know, because I haven't seen any of his, like, original pages, like, at cons that we've been at. But the colors almost look, like, watercolored-ish. Kind of like Matt Kent style or Jeff Lemire style when they draw.
Hmm. Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah. So what do you think of this issue? You got a highlights for me?
All right. Well, I mean, like, since you mentioned the title of the issue is Betrayal, you know, like, we could start there, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I thought it was, you know, pretty powerful in that scene, basically, you know, like, I feel like there was already kind of a discussion about, like, what if, like, Mary would try to, like, fix Adam, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of co-opted, you know, like, basically, you know, like, made irrelevant, like, when Victoria and Imogen just went and tried to kill him, you know?
Right.
And then, like, in that moment, you know, as he's running away from them, trying to kill him, you know, like, basically, you know, he's like, I screwed up. Mm-hmm. It'll never happen again. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'll never make another mistake. And they're like, no, you gotta die.
Yeah.
You know, he gets away and he says, I love you and you're going to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a pretty strong emotional beat.
Yeah. Agreed. And like, and Adam even tries to justify his actions, if that makes sense. You know, because mm-hmm. like they go after him because he took a life, basically, and he was like, it's out of allegiance for you guys. It's out of loyalty. And then, you know, that it's not, it's like they see their failures in him, if that makes sense. Kind of like what I'm sure normal or a lot of people do.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it was, because then you feel betrayed on both sides of the coin. Like, Adam feels betrayed, but then also they feel betrayed because they see their failures, basically, and it's not living up to their standards.
Sure. I mean, if they're internalizing the guilt, you know, as like, yeah, it's a representation of their failure.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, I don't know if that's, you know, betrayal. That's more like they kind of are just faced with it. But I do accept your analysis of that, because I think that's essentially why, you know, Victoria kind of like goes off a ledge in this issue, you know, like, mm-hmm. I think she's like driven mad by guilt, and you know, she's being held together by Imogen, you know, but I assume the guilt is because, you know, a lady got murdered because of her experiment.
Right. Yeah. And she's very guilt ridden of that. And let's see.
Yeah. I mean, okay. While we're on the subject of guilt,
yeah,
I would add, I think it's interesting that every single one of them now is an accomplice to this murder.
Yep.
And that may be why they are kind of now, like, signing up to be the Scooby Gang to chase after a monster.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, the Scooby Gang. No,
they need a dog.
Yeah, yeah. I totally get it. But I don't know. I kind of, this also has that like gray area of where, well, not really, I guess, because I don't, do you think it has the gray area of, do you pick the Scooby Gang side or do you pick Adam's side? Or is it more black and white than that? As to where, you know, he's basically not a living thing, so it's just a experiment gone wrong.
I don't know if I can really kind of make a moral judgment, if only because, like, at the very least, we don't really see more than a panel or two of his education, you know, and he's like weeks old, you know? Right.
Yeah.
So the idea that, you know, a reanimated being could, you know, pick up, he's like forming a new identity, but that he could pick up even rudimentary reading and writing. But like beyond that, like, I don't know. I would argue, you know, university level, like, subjects on some level or another, you know?
Right.
Like, it's all kind of, it seems to be going remarkably fast. So, you know, if you built a robot and it fucked up after 3 weeks, like, it's not the robot's fault.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I mean that, I guess also, like, let me add a question to you.
All right.
Like, do you think that Mary could have fixed it? Cause that's what she wanted to do.
That's a good question. Part of me wants to say, yes, I think she could have fixed it, because I think, from everybody, she has the most, she shows the most patience, and so I think everybody else was trying to speed up the process, like you said, and then when it didn't take, then that's when they were like, okay, 3 weeks done, fuck it, it's over. But I think she would have showed the more responsible approach to it. What about you? Do you think so?
I you know, it's tough to know. It's possible.
Yeah.
Like, given, like, again, how much time do you have in the course of a month or whatever to like start somebody from learning the alphabet to learning about morality and gender politics and
right.
your own personal loyalties. And, you know, like, so maybe another week of killing bad, you're like, don't kill, might have sunk in. He's right. he's been a pretty good pupil.
Right.
But I just wonder whether basically, let's say a murder happened with no, like, extraneous witnesses, if Percy and Byron, etc., hadn't seen it happen, where they would have just been like, okay, this is set back.
Yeah, right.
But we could continue.
Mm-hmm. There's
also...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No.
You go.
No, I was just saying that in the scene, there's like a ton, and this is where Hayden comes in too. Like when they, like, I think it's the last page or second to last page, when they go after and they open the door to the lab, and Hayden does this brilliantly, but there's tons of blood in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And like you only see the red hair on her head, and then everything else is like a jigsaw kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just found it like, I know it's gory without being like overly done gory, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead. Go with what you were going to say.
Since okay.
I threw you off track.
No. No, I love gore. I'm right with you. I was just going to say, since you're talking about Adam, that I was interested what he is up to in his abandoned hospital laboratory.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I don't know, like, easy assumption would be it's like make a wife, you know, like same thing that kind of is in like the Frankenstein novel,
right.
You know?
Right.
But I would assume that he was planning his revenge or something.
Mm-hmm.
Already.
Yeah.
He's doing something.
Yeah. You would. And that's on the page that I was talking about, where it shows, like, it's the close-up where it says the servants, they're all, and then she says, I know. But, like, there's just head and hands. So I wonder if that's, like, foreshadowing for, like, what you're saying, if he was making himself a bride, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still awesome, though.
Yeah. Okay, also, yeah, that is an impressive amount of blood.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. See? Yeah.
I just pulled it up.
Yeah.
So, good point, Ronnie.
So, I think with all of that, I think... I think it's easy to assume that that's what he's doing. Is trying to make either A, another person like him... which would ultimately be the Bride of Frankenstein, or Eve, I guess we can call her, since he's Adam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also shows that he's evolving too. Because, you know, before that, like at the beginning of the book, they were berating him for murdering out of protection or out of loyalty, and that's not okay, or they didn't think it was okay. And then now, you know, he's basically killing the servants, which would make him a legit monster at that point, just to recreate or reanimate his own person so he's not so lonely, I guess. Or to mm-hmm. show them that he can do what they did. I don't know. I think it's really cool either way.
Yeah. I mean, this is what, issue 4?
Yep.
Do we know how many? Is it... I mean, it's... It's not to be concluded, right? So there's still at least...
Yeah, it's to be continued. More.
Yeah.
So there's at least 2 more, I would assume. 5 and then 6.
We're just
6.
Getting to the monster hunting part.
Right.
Yeah. Also, in service of that, I was sad. It's interesting that Percy seems to have prophetic visions.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a good get for the Monster Hunter squad.
Yeah. So, final thoughts on this before we rate it up, or are you ready to rate it up?
I'm ready.
All right. I want to go first on this one. And I'm going to stick to my previous two, and I'm going to go 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I like 4 out of 5 on this one.
All right. And we will move on to our final book. It's Animosity 22, written by Marguerite Bennett, and art by Elton Tomasi and Rob Schwager, DC Alonzo, and Taylor Esposito. And then this one, this issue, 22, is entitled The Lindworm. So basically the story here in this issue is basically Jesse and Sandor had trippy visions and they decided not to tell the snakes what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For whatever reason.
Well, I mean, Jesse's reason, I think, you know, may what I got from her in this issue, I thought was kind of like, you know, the revelation of her, like, psychedelic trip mm-hmm. is like, oh, like, religion is bullshit, which is like, you know, not an uncommon
yeah.
Experience from a psychedelic trip.
Right.
But she also, in this issue, when she's coming back, says something to the effect of, like, but, like, I do understand the value of it, and, like, if, you know, this stuff gives the snakes, you know, meaning, then it's good. Right. And, you know, I think philosophically there's a lot of, like, solid ground under that, which is basically, like, objectively, anything that gives somebody's life meaning is, like, that's the meaning of life.
Right.
That's the meaning of that life.
Yeah.
Is what you are able to attach to it.
Right. Agreed. And I think that's, like, she saw whatever, she, you know, her thing, but to her, it was just whatever, but she didn't want to crush their hopes for it. So then they kept on waiting or wanting, living to find that meaning, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're looking for other, they're already recruiting other people to,
yeah,
to do the same thing, you know?
Right.
But it kind of, I don't know, I think it speaks to something else in the issue somewhere, which was kind of the idea that, like, what you get out of it is what you put into it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that would suggest that, like, there's not really an objective truth to any of their visions, you know? So, like, what Sandor saw was what he brought into it.
Right.
You know, yep. So I think the snakes may be barking up the wrong tree, I guess.
Yeah. Agreed. But it's still
they
there.
They should just eat some mushrooms or something, because yeah. They're probably...
They'd probably see, like, the same
resistant
thing.
To venom.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not resistant to each other's venom, I would wager. So if they just, like, cross-pollinate, they can all have their own unique...
Trip.
You know, trips.
Yeah. This one seemed more straightforward than a lot of issues that we've talked about and covered before.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's lots of things to unravel here, but, like, with what each one saw in their dream or their acid trip, rather, or poison trip. But, like, I think other than that, I don't know if there's more to it than like, you know, say issue 21. I know you and Martin like talked forever about it, you know, in the different cross sections of the story itself. But like with this one, you know, you have the overall point of this issue, and then basically what each one saw in their dream, and then, you know, that's kind of it, really. Agreed.
Well, we're talking about the issue where they're like back from the trip, right?
Yeah.
Like where they get pulled out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, kind of. I really think that the crux of this issue for me is more like emotional and character based.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, so the scene between Jesse and Sandor seems like super, super weighted to me.
Mm-hmm. When they tell each other they love each other, that part.
Or, I mean, there's a lot in that scene.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of among other things, I was super moved by the part where Sandor goes off for just a little bit about, like, we always think that there's going to be more time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I think should ring true for everybody.
Yeah.
Dog or not.
Yeah.
You know? Like, everybody thinks that.
Yep.
And you always think that until, you know, those people are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, reading that to me, like, just rang home again, like, what we already know about Sandor's health, you know? And it makes me worry that he's not going to be around that much longer.
Yeah, agreed. And I think he's noticing that. I think that's where that speech came from, is where he needed to get it off his chest, and because he knows that his time's limited. So, you know, it. And I think that's what made that scene where they're holding each other and they, you know, the I love you cowgirl and I love you too part really hit home. And then they try to not brush it off, but get past it by asking each other what they saw. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I agree. I think I'm fearful that, well, this is issue 22. I'm fearful that Sandor won't make it to issue 30. Somehow, like, this is foreshadowing. This issue is foreshadowing that part more so for the here and now instead of the later on.
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of feel that, like, if Sandor is gonna, you know, pass of natural causes, that I would think that he would hang on until, like, he thinks that Jesse is safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he's gonna be, you know, moved to that,
right?
So I feel like that may line up loosely with when they get to San Francisco,
right? Yep, I agree with that. You got more thoughts on this issue?
I guess I would just ask you, you know, maybe as a throwaway.
Okay.
Like, I thought I also liked in the Jesse Sandor scene when they start out with the whole kind of like dialogue that's all like thoughts and not said.
Mm-hmm.
If that speaks to your experience as a dad.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's kind of, you know that you're saying it and they understand what you're saying without anything being said. You know, just the looks or just the silent moment or, you know, the gesture, just putting your arm around them. So, yeah, it really speaks there because sometimes it's best not to say anything at all and just they know and you know type thing. So, yeah, it speaks to me pretty heavily, actually. And I really liked how it started off as late or early morning, and then when they're talking, the sun's going down, and then they're there, like, when it comes back up. And how the world looks different from that conversation, like the background part of it. Like when they're talking, everything seems dark and gloomy, I guess. But then once that exchange is over, everything seems bright and new again. Maybe like a different perspective, I guess.
That's awesome, man. Mind blown.
So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Even though it's a self-contained issue, I think for me, and there's, for me, there was more to unpack than what we normally had. It still gets a 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, 5 out of 5 for sure.
Cool. And I don't know where we're going to go next episode because, as everybody knows, that these are books from like 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago now. So we'll just see where we go next. What say you, Travis?
I say we do another episode that does this week's books and then we get back on sketch.
Okay. Cool with me, because Martin's gone for this month, so Travis and I will say...
Which is, you know, it's the last week. Martin's back next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next weekend. But I'll say that you and I will record sometime over the weekend about...
Yes.
This week's books, and then we'll get it out before New Comic Book Day on Wednesday. And then we'll be back on track for when the boss comes back.
Yes. And then we'll sneak in an episode for Shock 2, maybe.
Yep. Sounds good to me. And did you and Martin do Out of the Blue Volume 1?
I think we did discuss it.
Okay.
So,
cause that so was one
that,
of the...
that could be maybe a tidy adjoinder to the Shock discussion. Shock,
okay. Because I couldn't remember if you guys did or not, since it was OGN.
I mean, I seem to remember discussing it.
Okay.
At some point, so.
That's cool.
That's my vote.
All right. We can do that. We can do Shock Volume 2 and... Out of the Blue Volume 2 in the same episode then. As a bonus episode.
Patreon exclusive.
That's right. You got anything else before we get out of here?
I'm tapped out, dude.
All right. You can find Martin at Geekvine. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm at Rombar316. And the show is at Aftershock Central Pod. And we will see you next time.
Shock the world.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.